With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN, C-O-L-I-N. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. If you didn't catch it, we recorded an emergency episode yesterday to talk about the flagrant 2 ejection. I'd recommend going back and listening to that, because I gave my full thoughts on it, what I thought would happen or should happen. And yeah, I thought it would, you know, I think it's pretty good for you to check out. But now here we are one day later, same place, different time. But we will talk about that again. But more importantly, we'll go in depth on the Warriors and Grizzlies game one. And we'll also talk about the game one between Boston and Milwaukee. And then I'll give you my thoughts leading into the Suns, Mavericks, and Heat Sixers series and how I think those series will play out. We got some injuries in both of those other series that really can sway the series one way or the other. We're dealing with injury ourselves with Andre Iguodala. Obviously, James Wiseman has been out all year. And then Steven Adams, who's been in COVID protocol, who may possibly be back tomorrow. I'm not sure if he will or not. But, you know, everybody's been dealing with it. And, you know, that's a part of it. But we'll talk about all of that. Number one, let's get right into it. NBA does not rescind the flagrant 2. They don't downgrade it. No surprise there. I said yesterday, if you're looking for an idiot, look no further than Draymond Green. That statement rings true again. As I said yesterday, I'm looking forward to them rescinding it. And they didn't have a good explanation. You know, they never have a good explanation. Sometimes they don't even give it an explanation. So the explanation to me wasn't good. They didn't really want to explain it to me. They told Bob to tell me. So, you know, when I look back on my suspension from game 5 of the NBA Finals, so the way this works, for those who don't understand, is in the playoffs, which is ridiculous, by the way, but in the playoffs, whether you are in the first round and lose or you go to the NBA Finals, you get the same amount of texts, you get the same amount of flagrant foul points, you get the same amount of everything. It's one of those old, outdated rules that doesn't make any sense, and no one takes the time to change them, because why? And the reality is that one, I'd love for someone to explain to me how someone could lose in game or in round 1 and another team can go on a possible three more rounds and they still have the same number of techs they're allowed to get or the same number of flagrant foul points. But how it does work is you get 7 technical fouls before a suspension in the playoffs. That's the entire playoffs. That's not per series. And you get 4 flagrant foul points. Now, how do flagrant foul points work for those that don't understand is if you get a flagrant 1, that is 1 point. If you get a flagrant 2, that is 2 points. If you get 4 points total, you get a 1-game suspension, which is how I got suspended from game 5. I have 4 points total, and I was suspended for a game. I also received a foul after the fact. My flagrant foul was given to me after the fact, and I tried to hit him and missed when LeBron stepped over me. I received a foul. Funny thing is, you know, the funny thing about it to me is 3 of my flagrant foul points that I received to eventually end up missing game 5, the NBA went back and reviewed them. They went back to the tape after the game, reviewed it, and upgraded me to flagrant fouls. Upgraded. They don't quite go back and update anyone else to flagrant fouls. That's not really a thing. You know, we've seen plays this playoffs that could have possibly been upgraded to flagrant fouls. You may have seen me say in the Denver series when Bones Highland need Otto Porter, I got suspended from a game for that. They added a rule after I was suspended that year for knees to the groin and a flagrant 1. As you see, Otto Porter did not receive a flagrant 1. And that rule is essentially the Draymond Green rule. So they may as well add this one too and say no one else gets upgraded, and that is the Draymond rule. And that's fine. Again, it's a badge of honor. I don't run from it. It is what it is. Your thoughts are your thoughts. I really don't care. They asked me today, they said, are you going to, you know, now that you have 2 flagrant foul points, are you going to tone down the bite? No. I'm going to be me. Because if I tone down who I am, A, you probably never would have known who I am. B, I wouldn't have had the success that I've had. And C, and most importantly, even if I made it to the NBA, I wouldn't still be sitting here today. So why would I tone that down? Why would I stop being me? I can be me better than I can be anyone else in this world. And I can also be me better than anyone else can be me. So if I do that best, why do anything else? That does not make sense to me. I don't understand when people do a job or do a thing and they say, oh, I need to do it this way. That's not organic to you. And if it's not organic to you, you can only take that so far. Like, you can only act for so long. You can only be someone else for so long. And even being somebody else, is that even fun? I don't know. I can't give you an answer to that because I'm only me. I'm only going to be me. Good, bad, or indifferent, like it or not, I'm just going to be me. And that's worked for me way better than me trying to be somebody else. I remember coming into the NBA my rookie year, and I was playing the 3 position. And I was kind of just spotting up and shooting. Now I'm like, I'm not a spot-up shooter. I can make a shot, but I'm not a spot-up shooter. And at that moment, after my rookie year, I said, listen, I just got to do this my way. And if I fail doing it my way, I can go home and say I gave it everything that I had. And because I gave it everything that I had, I can live with the result. But if I go out like I played this year, my rookie year, trying to still play this type of basketball and I don't make it, I'm not going to be able to live with myself because I didn't do me. And at that point, I told myself, no matter what the situation is, I'm going to always be true, stay true to who I am and be me. You see, like, guys go into media after playing and all of a sudden turn into cowards, like, and rats, supposed to be tough guys and turn into rats. Like, I can't be that guy. It just won't work for me. I don't care the amount of money you offer. I don't care the amount of appearances you offer. I can't be that guy. I have to be me, which was one of the reasons I ended up signing with Turner, because they allow me to be me. They want me to be me. And that's the only way I can do the job, is if I'm allowed to be Draymond Green. And so in saying that, for me to, oh, I'm going to tone it back. Like, tone what back? I didn't think that was a flagrant two, so there's not much to tone back there. So again, if I'm supposed to take an even softer foul in the middle of the playoffs, then I'll probably just end up suspended. And no, do I want to end up suspended from a game? No, but I'm also not trying to give up an and one, because those points matter. One point game last night. Everybody always look at basketball and say, man, did you see Ja Morant miss the layup? That's when they lost the game. They didn't lose the game on that layup. 1 point is 1 point, whether it's scored then or scored in the first quarter. That 1 point still matters to the end tally of the game, the ending total, the final score. That 1 point matters. Everybody gets it all misconstrued and say, oh, man, such and such made this play down the stretch, and that's why they lost. That play may have changed something in that instant, but you better believe there was a play in the second quarter that played a role in that team losing. And this is not just the Memphis Grizzlies. This is basketball or sports as a whole. That plays a role in it as well. A play in the second quarter may have totally changed the momentum, and that one swing could have cost you the game. And when you learn to watch film like that, when you learn to watch sports like that, in particular, I'm speaking of basketball, now you learn how to watch like a coach. Now you learn how to watch like someone who can really thoroughly evaluate a game. And so for me, I'm not trying to give up an and one. And if I need to take a foul softer than I did and try to hold a guy up from falling to the floor, then I'm sorry, but I don't know what to tell you. What I would ask for is, you know, this seems to be a common thing. Excessive. What's excessive? Like Damian Lillard tweeted, what actually is excessive? Because we're all human beings, and my definition of excessive and your definition of excessive is to make be two totally different things. And if they are two totally different things, which most likely they are, because we're two totally different people with two totally different feelings, two totally different views on things. And so if your view, which it probably is, of something excessive is different than my view, then it just becomes, oh, well, I think that was excessive. And so now it's just based on a person's opinion. You know, when you look at the replay system, the fans, well, before I talk about the replay system, and we'll roll into that, the fans start chanting, throw him out, throw him out. Like I said yesterday, officials are human beings. So they want to feel gratification from people as well, because they are human beings. They're not robots. They're actual people who like actually go home to their family, to their kids, to their significant others. Those are real people with real feelings. If I hear a crowd going crazy saying, throw him out, I don't want to be booed. I don't mind being booed, but most people mind being booed. I actually love the boos. I'm looking forward to tomorrow because I know I'm going to get a bunch of them. That's going to be fantastic. I really feed off the boos. I love the boos. But most people don't. Most people hate being booed because most people thrive off of gratification and not self-gratification. They thrive off of other people pumping them up, other people cheering for them. Most people thrive off of that. And so because of that, you review these plays in Secaucus, New Jersey, the NBA replay center. Why doesn't the decision come from there? Someone who's not in the emotion of a game, someone who's watching the play and saying, I thought this happened. I am not the ones that got to get booed by the crowd if I make this call, blah, blah, blah. Why doesn't the decision come from there? Because the decision coming from someone who I could have just said something to and pissed off about a call, and now they need to make a decision like that. Again, you can't tell me that the human element does not play a role in that. I am a human being too. I know how things can sway me one way or the other. And so why isn't the emotions of the game taken out? Do you think an official comes in the game and does not have emotion? No, of course. Of course they have emotion. The way to take the emotions out of a game is that call comes from caucus. Someone who's not in, let alone in a building or on the court, someone who's not even in the same city, let alone state. There's no city, NBA team in New Jersey anymore. Not even in the same state. That's one way of guys really appreciating the integrity of the game. That's one way of totally removing the emotion that a referee may feel during a particular game. And so, you know, it is what it is. They're not going to reduce it. Can I say I'm surprised? Of course not. This is me you're talking about. And like I said, I wear that badge of honor. So whatever. Moving on to the actual game, which I thought was a very good game. I thought in the first quarter and starting the game, we did okay with our game plan, but not great. We didn't take the offensive rebounds away. They got plenty second chance opportunities, and that gave them momentum. They really feed off that. They get guys going off of that. And so to start the game, I thought we needed to play a little tougher and we need to rebound better. As the game went on, especially as we got into that second quarter and got our foot in it and, you know, started to figure it out, we really started to rebound the ball better. And as you can see, I think Jordan Poole ended with eight or nine rebounds. That's big time. Jonathan Kuminga come off the bench in limited minutes, 6 rebounds. That's big time. You know, and the list goes on and on. But that team, our coaching staff told us, they said the game starts when we shoot the ball and when they shoot the ball. And pretty much what they were saying is just like, when we shoot the ball, they're coming. I mean, you got Ja Morant, who's probably the fastest guy in the NBA. They're looking for him. He's getting the ball, and he's coming full speed. And everybody else is running with him and also trailing him for three. So when you say the game starts when they shoot or we shoot, that's how it starts when they shoot, when we shoot. When they shoot, it starts because they crash the offensive rebound. Like, not many teams that I've seen in the NBA. And that's a huge part of their offense, generating second chance points. So I feel like in going into the game, it's hard to tell someone that and get you to understand it because you can't really simulate that. And so it took us about a quarter to figure out. And once we figured it out, I think we rebounded the ball really well because guys understood that it's a 5-guy job. It's not a 1-guy job. It's not 2-guy job. It's a 5-man job. And everyone has to come back in and rebound. I think we did a great job of that, which ultimately prepared us and, you know, allowed us to be in a position to win that game. And that was really huge for us. I thought Jordan Poole, the way he came off the bench and played, especially with Klay Thompson getting in foul trouble right away, he looked just like Jordan Poole from games 1, 2, and 3 of the first series. He had a little bit of a struggle those last 2 games, which is to be expected. If I'm not mistaken, the kid had played like 29 games, 29 straight, very good games. Like, at some point, you have to have a bad one. And, you know, he had a rough one in game 4, better game in game 5. He just didn't shoot as well, but he had a much better game in game 5 of the Denver series. And then yesterday, he broke out again and had an incredible game, 31-9-8. It's funny. I was saying in my press conference earlier today, Jordan has irrational confidence. Jordan, I don't have that confidence that Jordan has. Most people don't have that confidence that Jordan has. It's a little irrational. Like, why would Jordan Poole think, I'm on the floor with Steph Curry, I'm on the floor with Klay Thompson, I should have the ball, I should be taking these shots. It's very irrational. But you need guys like that. When you're going to do great things, you need guys with irrational confidence. That's what makes them great. And so, you know, for Steph Curry to shoot the way Steph Curry shoots, you have to have irrational confidence to do that. For Klay Thompson to shoot the way he's supposed to shoot, you have to be a bit irrational. And Jordan Poole has irrational confidence. It showed last night. I mean, he played like, yeah, I'm supposed to be in this moment and I'm supposed to play well. And it's like, actually, you're probably not supposed to be in this moment and you're not supposed to play that well. But because he has irrational confidence, and I say that with envy because I wish I had irrational confidence, it's a beautiful thing. He goes right to that stage. He shows up like it's his stage, like he belongs there. He delivers the game he had, and we come out with the win in spite of me getting ejected, in spite of Clay, Wiggins, and Steph combining for 9 for 27 from the three, in spite of the block charge call, which could have went either way, in spite of the out-of-bounds call that was ended up being a jump ball and we lost and they scored 2 points off of it. In spite of all the things that went wrong for us, we still were able to come out with that win. And that says a lot. And Jordan Poole was a key point in that. I just mentioned Steph, Clay, and Wiggins combining for 9 for 27 from three. That is a testament to a battle-tested team. That is a testament to a team that knows how to win a game, win games. Because there was no way we should have won the game. I just don't believe we should have won the game. But we found a way. And that's the playoffs. It's not always going to be pretty. It's not always going to be Steph Curry going for having a Curry flurry, as people call him, and going for 40. Or Klay Thompson scoring 37 points. It won't always be that way. Sometimes you have to win them ugly. But when you win them ugly, especially in a game one, there's no better way of winning. And so I thought that was a great thing. I don't expect those guys to shoot the way they did. And the thing is, it's like there were quite a few open ones, and they just didn't go down. So, you know, if we can get those same shots.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Love it. Overall, I was very proud of my guys and stepping up. You know, we spoke about it before they left the locker room, like, hey, man, go deliver a gut punch. Go out there and take the game. And we went out there and took it, and it was a beautiful thing to see. And I think that sets us up well for this series because we didn't play great. You know, so if we come back in game two and we play great, I think if we play great, we win. I always felt that way. If we play great, another team play great, I think we win. It's not necessarily the truth, but that's what I feel and I believe. So, you know, hopefully we're, you know, I don't think we've played very well since game three, not even really since game two. And so I think, you know, I think one of those games are brewing, and I'm hoping so. It can come at a great time if it comes tomorrow. Celtics and Bucks. I actually had to go back and watch that game. As you know, I was getting ready. So as the game was starting, it was my bus time and then preparation for our game. So I didn't have a chance to watch it. And I had to go back and watch that game. And what I took away from that game immediately, I mean, I could see it in the first four possessions of the game, is Milwaukee. Milwaukee is actually a team that will give up three-point shots. Like, if you look at their stats during a regular season, Milwaukee will give up three-point shots. Their thing is to protect the paint. And that was on full display with seven exclamation marks last night. They were protecting the paint. They said, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum will not beat us. Grant Williams is going to have to beat us. Al Horford is going to have to beat us. Marcus Smart is going to have to beat us. Robert Williams is going to have to beat us. Their defense on Jason Tatum looked a lot like Boston defense in the previous series on Kevin Durant. Multiple bodies thrown at him, very physical and bumping. And as you can see, I think the Celtics scored 98 points. And
89, even worse.
I'm sorry. Oh, I flipped it around. 89 points. And I mean, that's a very, 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 you know, we all talk about Boston's defense, but that is a very high-powered offense as well. And to score 89 points, that's some incredible defense. To also score 89 points while Giannis shoots a terrible percentage, while Drew shoots a terrible percentage, that means that when you're shooting terrible percentage like that, you get the rebound, you run. That creates transition opportunities. Their transition defense was stellar. I saw a couple of times where it looked like Jason Tatum would easily get a bucket and guys come flying around from everywhere and made it tough. Now, Milwaukee, my thing with that series is, if I'm Milwaukee, I leave that game saying, what's the likelihood that Giannis is going to shoot 9 for 25? What is the likelihood that that Drew Holiday is going to shoot 5 for 20?
Eight for 20.
8 for 20. What's the likelihood of that? Now, if I'm Milwaukee, that's what I'm thinking. If I'm Boston, I think I hang my hat on defense. Drew Holiday will shoot 8 for 20 again. Giannis will shoot 9 for 25 again. And Jason Tatum won't shoot this poorly again. And Jaylen Brown won't shoot 2 for 15 again. And so if you're both teams, you leave the game. I think if I'm Milwaukee, I leave the game feeling a little bit better. But if you're Boston, you still leave the game feeling semi-good. But you also have to be realistic that in guarding great players, you're just not always going to shut them down. So at some point, Giannis, you're going to have a couple turnovers. Giannis is going to get dunks. That may get him going, right? And so that series, I think it's probably going to go 6 or 7. Milwaukee to go still one on the road without Chris Middleton. You know, it's already been announced that Chris Middleton will be out this series. You go still one on the road, you got the opportunity, to go in and get greedy tomorrow. But to go home and just take care of home court advantage and win two games at home, I mean, that can really put you in a great position. So I love the position that Milwaukee is in. I think they're doing an incredible job. They did an incredible job last night. And I don't expect that defense to change. That is a championship ball club that know what it takes to win. And one thing that championship ball clubs do is they stick to their game plan. And like I said, their game plan was evident. Grant Williams shot 45% from three this year. Grant Williams had several threes, point attempts, and no one was near him. Al Horford had several three-point attempts. No one was near him. I think within the first four possessions that Boston had, it was 2 3-point attempts by Al Horford and a drive middle and a 1 foot fall away by Al Horford. And if I'm Mike Budenholzer, if I'm Giannis, if I'm Drew Holiday, I'm saying kudos. This is exactly what we want. So we want Al Horford to beat us on offense. We know Jayson Tatum can beat us on offense. We know Jaylen Brown can beat us on offense. So the Bucks executed their game well, their game plan well, but that series, I can see that series going 6 or 7. Ultimately, I cannot. I think Boston has a legitimate chance of winning the series. I think Boston is a very, very, very good ball club. But for me personally, I would be a little worried leaving that game if I am Boston, just because of the way it played out. But we'll see. We'll figure that out tomorrow. Predictions on the Suns Mavs. This won't be a cakewalk for the Suns. I mean, the Mavericks have a very good team. They're playing really well, and they have Luka Doncic. And anytime you have a player like that on the floor, and he's on your squad, you always have a chance of winning the game. And so, you know, D-Book is still coming back from a hamstring injury. I don't expect him to be 100%. He's probably more like 65, 70%. Dorian Finney-Smith is a ball hawk. Now, here's something to watch. I want to, in doing this show, this Draymond Green show, one thing, or when I'm doing other, you know, TNT, or I want to teach the game of basketball, and I want to teach people how to watch the game of basketball. And you have to learn how to, if you don't already, you have to learn the game within the game. And one game within the game is Reggie Bullock is an incredible, incredible wing defender. He's a very good defender, has great length, is a good athlete. But CP is Reggie Bullock's big homie. That's a game within the game. Because now you talk about your matchups if you're Dallas, and which means Luka probably will guard Jay Crowder. Okay, so now you have Jalen Brunson, who will probably guard Mikal Bridges, okay? Which means Dwight Powell, obviously, on DeAndre Ayton, which means you have to figure out, do you want to go Finney-Smith on Book and Reggie on Chris Paul, or do you want to flip that? The logical answer would be to put Finney-Smith on Book because he's stronger. Book will take you to the post. Book, get there, he bump you. That would be the logical answer. Reggie got length. He can fly around the perimeter with CP. That would be the logical answer. But then when you take the game, when you take the game within the game into consideration, you have to ask yourself, with their personal relationship and CP being his big homie, how does he really affect CP, and is CP fazed by him at all? Because that is a real thing. And so I'm interested in seeing how that matchup plays out. I think they'll start the logical way, but I'm interested in seeing if there will need to be a change or not. In saying that, game one, I am taking the Phoenix Suns to win the game. Over the series, it's a tough one because this Mavs team, I'm telling you, this Mavs team is not a pushover by any stretch of the imagination. And so I'm going to admit, this is a tough one for me to pick. It's a pick'em. I feel like it's a coin flip. Both teams are really good. Do I have to pick one? If I have to pick one...
You have to pick one.
I'm going to pick the underdog. I'm going to go with the Mavs. No underdog has won a series yet. At some point, an underdog has to win a series, right? I'm going to go with the Mavs. But, God, that's going to be a tough series. I'm really only going with the Mavs because they're the underdog, by the way. Because that series, I mean, God, that's going to be a really good series. I got to go with the Mavs. I got to roll with the underdog. And got to roll with the underdog. So I'm going to go with the Mavs. And the reality is that there's pressure on the Suns. There's no pressure on the Mavs. They have zero pressure. If they lose, they're supposed to lose. The Suns are supposed to win. They've been the best team all year. And so you have to take that pressure into account as well. CP's not fazed by pressure, neither is D-Book. So I don't expect the pressure to break the Suns. But it is pressure. Pressure is pressure. And you got to deal with it. I guess I'm going to go with the Mavs. And then you have Heat Sixers. A Joel Embiid-less Sixers. If Joel Embiid is out, see, here's the thing people aren't talking about, though. Kyle Lowry is also out, and Jimmy Butler is nursing a knee injury, knee soreness.
He is listed as available to play tonight.
Jimmy is.
Kyle Lowry's out.
But still, I was watching on the Miami Heat, I think, Instagram account yesterday. Jimmy was shooting corner threes. He had 12 out of 13. But he was gingerly pushing off and landing on that knee. And so that was something I'm like, that changes things. Not having Kyle Lowry, that changes things. Because what that does is it puts you back with Jimmy as the player that he was last year, which is more of a facilitator. With Kyle Lowry, Kyle Lowry can get everyone else involved. But Jimmy, I think Jimmy is much better playing the way he plays right now, which is I'm going to get it. I can facilitate, so I'm still going to make the right play, but I'm going to get it. And with Kyle out, that moves Jimmy back to that position. And that's something to watch. Now, the Sixers do have Joel out. And they'll have DeAndre and Paul Reed and possibly Georges Niang and, I mean, possibly Tobias. I don't know. They'll have those guys battling with Bam out of Bayou. And that is tough. Especially, see, if it's Joel having to guard Bam on one end, at least Joel's beating him up on the other end and he's having to guard Joel and lose some of his, you know, you battling with him, it tires you out, it wears the guy down. None of those guys Bam have to even worry about except boxing out. And so that right there is going to help Bam even more. Bam already a great player. And now he doesn't have to deal with Joel Embiid. I got the Heat in five. I'm taking the Heat in five. That's my analysis on our game, on the rest of the games going on in the NBA playoffs. Before we get out of here, we'd love to do some mailbag questions. As you know, hashtag the Draymond Green Show on Twitter. Jackson will find great questions. He will bring them here, and we will talk to you. We'll ask your question and give you our thoughts. Jackson, you got some questions for me?
I do. Let's start with from Bradley Williams at @B_Rad50. Do you like having a short rest period between playoff series or a longer rest period? I think this question is interesting in terms of between games too. Like you only have one game off between games one and two, but then you have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off between two and three. So do you like a longer rest period to let the body rest or a shorter period to sort of keep it rolling?
Honestly, as a guy who played in the playoffs since my rookie year, obviously missed the last two, but now, you know, I got to keep my rhythm. I got to keep my conditioning, blah, 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 blah. Now I'm in the 10th year of my career and you know how to keep your rhythm. You know how to keep your conditioning. And so just from a mental aspect, I always tell people a basketball game doesn't start when we walk on the court or even when we leave a hotel. A basketball game starts the moment you wake up on the day of the game. And really the night before, the day before, you're like prepping and you're getting things you need to feel good tomorrow. And so just the stress alone of a game day is brutal. It's brutal. I always tell people, they say, I can play in the NBA. The first thing I'll say to them is absolutely nothing about their skill, how they match up against a guy. I'll tell a guy in a heartbeat, you couldn't handle the stress of a game day. Like, let alone actually going out there and playing in the game. the stress of a game day. And so I think for us at this point, I'm in year 10, Clay's in year 11, Steph's in year 13, Andre's in year 17. I think for us at this point, you appreciate the rest. Now, once you get in the game, it does. There's a little adjustment period, but it's small. And so you appreciate the rest. Now, in saying that, too much rest could be an issue. Like, I was worried that if we swept Denver, we'd be off for 9 days. That's a long time with no games. And you come and play a team that had a game 2 nights before. That's a long time. But, you know, you're talking 4 to 6 day break. We'll accept that with open arms anytime we can get it.
Next one. You sort of talked about this a little bit earlier, but I'm curious for a more in-depth answer. From Nick Charlton Perrin at LeBond James 007, what did you say to the team at halftime?
I told the guys at halftime, I said, go out and take this game. That'll be a gut punch. You know, this is a game we're not supposed to win. We're not playing our best basketball. We're not shooting well. Klay Thompson with 3 fouls, Gary Payton with 3 fouls, Steph Curry with 3 fouls. I'm ejected. Go out and take the game. Go take their punch, throw punches back, and just go steal the game. Win the game however we need to win the game. It's not going to be pretty. Just go win the game. And guys, they did it. And it was beautiful to see. And there was so many things and people that contributed to that win. And I, like I said earlier, I think that puts us in a great position for this series.
All right, last one, a little bit of a lighter note. From DJ Hella Yella at DJ Hella Yella, how do y'all decide who gets to control the music in team settings?
James Wiseman actually is a very good, like James Wiseman, he's all over the place, which is great. Like James Wiseman to give you some Lil Baby and Gunna. James Wiseman to give you some NWA. The kid loves music, which is why he, you know, he records his own music. He make beats. The kid loves music. And I mean, he's all over the place. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, he can check so many boxes. Like James will walk up to a guy like, hey, Dre, what you feeling today? Want to go here? You want to go there? Da, 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 and he will take you there. So James Wiseman does a really good job. Ultimately, it's going to be controlled by the vets. Like whoever the vets say, we don't want to hear that. We want to hear this, or we don't want you on the aux. We want him on the aux. Then that's what's going to happen. So ultimately, the vets decide. But James Wiseman does an incredible job. That's a wrap for this episode of the Draymond Green Show. Bradley, DJ Hella Yella, LeBron James 007. That would be Nick Charlton Perrin. We appreciate the questions as always. We appreciate your participation. We appreciate our subscribers and our listeners. We don't take that for granted. We love you. We hope to continue to bring you great content. Until next time, from the Draymond Green Show, that's a wrap. Peace.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.